Welcome to the Career Accelerator, the podcast where corporate managers will find tips and tools to deliver results through others.
Hello, I'm your host, Percy Cannon. As mentioned in our previous podcast, today we have a very special guest, my friend and mentor, Bob Berg. For over 30 years, Bob Berg has been successfully showing entrepreneurs, leaders, and sales professionals how to communicate their value and accelerate their business growth. Together with John David Mann, Bob is the co-author of the Go Giver 4-book series, with total sales of well over 1 million copies and with translations into 30 languages. Bob is founder of the Go Giver Community Network, which helps aspiring Go Givers like me become stratospherically successful. He is an advocate, supporter, and defender of the free enterprise system, believing that the amount of money one makes is directly proportional to how many people they serve. He is also an unapologetic animal fanatic and served on the board of directors of Furry Friends Adoption and Clinic in his town of Jupiter, Florida. Hi, Bob. How are you doing today?
Doing great, Percy. How about yourself?
Oh, not bad, not bad. Enjoying the day, enjoying the weather. And you?
I'm doing great. Same thing. And, you know, I love your attitude. You always have such a wonderful, uplifting attitude. And it just, really sets a great frame for everyone who deals with you, does business with you, and really, like me, has an opportunity to learn from you every time we speak.
Well, thank you. Although I think I'm the one who learns the most from you. But I want to thank you for participating in the Career Accelerator podcast. You know this, I have enjoyed reading the 4 books in the Go Giver series, and I actually feel very honored to be part of the Go Giver community. Thank you for that, Bob.
Our pleasure.
Today, though, I would like to ask you to talk to us about your latest book, The Go Giver Influencer. And for that, can I ask you to start by defining the concept of influence and influencer?
Yeah. You know, when we talk about influence, and, you know, I remember when the great leadership authority, John Maxwell, when he said that leadership is influence, nothing more, nothing less. And I thought, what a great saying. He also said influence is everything, right? And so in the context of leadership being influence, influence is everything, because you can have so much great potential as a leader. You can have all sorts of competence. You can have great character. You can have all sorts of things going for you and working with you. But unless you can influence others, nothing significant is really going to happen. So with that, let's define influence first, both traditional influence and what we would call go-giver influence. So on a very, very basic level, Percy, influence can be defined as the ability to move a person or persons to a desired action, usually within the context of a specific goal. Now, that's its definition, but that's not its essence. The essence of influence is pull as opposed to push, as in the old saying, how far can you push a rope? And I think every leader knows not very far, at least not very fast or very effectively, which is why great leaders, great influencers, genuine influencers don't push. You know, you never hear people say, wow, that Tom or that Mary, she is so influential. She has a lot of push with people. No, they'd say she's influential. She has a lot of pull with people. That's what influence is. It's pull. It's an attraction. Great influencers attract people first to themselves and only then to their ideas. So how do they do this? How do they pull? Well, really it begins with focus. It's where you're focused. You know, in the original book, The Go-Giver, we have the law of influence, law number three, which says your influence is determined by how abundantly you place other people's interests first. No, not in a self-sacrificial way or a martyrish way, not at all. But it does make a very important point, and that is that, as Dale Carnegie wrote in his classic How to Win Friends and Influence People, and what I think was the underlying premise in this book, is when he so brilliantly wrote, ultimately, people do things for their reasons, not our reasons, right? And so the great leader, the great influencer, constantly questions themselves to make sure their focus is correct, that we need to be internally motivated, but outwardly focused. So the leader asks themselves, how does what I am asking this other person to do, how does it align with their goals, with their needs, their wants, their desires, their values, right? How does what I want this other person to do, how does what I'm asking this other person to do, how does it help them solve a problem? How does it help move them closer toward happiness? And, you know, when we ask ourselves these questions, Percy, thoughtfully, intelligently, genuinely, authentically, not as a way to manipulate another human being into doing our will, but as a way of building everyone in the process, now we've come a lot closer to earning that person's commitment as opposed to trying to depend on some type of compliance, which we know never really works, certainly not sustainably so. I love what one of my great mentors, her name is Dondi Scumaci. She speaks on team building, leadership. She's the mentor to many Fortune 500 companies throughout the world. And I just love this. She says, when it comes to leadership, when it comes to influence, she says, compliance will never take you where commitment can go.
Well, thank you, Bob. So, so true, so valid. And it really mirrors what I have seen a lot in the corporate world, both the goods and the not so goods, because there may be, still be a little bit of a leftover of the pushing in there. But certainly the great leaders that I have had the chance to work with, both inside the corporate world, as well as now as a coach and as a consultant, practice that pool that you talk about influencing. So thank you, Bob. Now, double clicking a bit, I'd like to ask you to now move to what you call the five secrets of genuine influence that you present in the book. And I'd like to start with the first one, which is master your emotions. Can you please tell us a little bit more about what this means?
The sages asked, who is mighty? And they answered, that person who can control their own emotions and make of an enemy or of a potential enemy a friend. And this is really where it all begins, because it's only by being in control of ourselves and our emotions that we're even in a position to take a negative situation or person and be able to turn it into a win for everyone involved. Now, you know, we all know this, and we all respect the person who just has that reputation and ability to totally be in control of themselves, to keep their cool, to be able to look at things logically and to be able to really problem solve because of that. And we admire ourselves when we can do that. Yet how often as a leader, okay, how often do we, based on what somebody else, based on what another person says or does, do we allow ourselves to become upset, anxious, victimized, or angry, right? And we say or do that very thing that not only is not productive, but it's absolutely counterproductive in getting the results we want. So, you know, we need to ask the question, why, if we know better, why do we do that? And the answer is because we're human beings. And as such, we are emotional creatures. Now, we'd like to think we're logical, and to a certain extent, of course, we are, but we're basically emotion based. We make major decisions based on emotion, and we back up those emotional decisions with logic, right? We rationalize, which if you break the word up in two, simply means we tell ourselves rational lies. And we do this in order to justify that awful decision we made or that awful loss of control that we just had. Now, we're certainly not advising that one denies their emotions or forgoes their emotions. First, it wouldn't work. It's denying human nature. It's denying truth. And as you know, successful people live in truths, right? They embrace truths. They work within those truths, but they still embrace those truths. So no. And also, there's no reason to deny our emotions or forego them. Emotions are beautiful part of life. I know how much you love your family and your grandchildren. And could you imagine not allowing yourself to be emotional about that, right? So, you know, emotions are a beautiful part of life. They make life worthwhile. No, by all means, have your emotions, but make sure that you are the master of your emotions as opposed to your emotions being the master of you. I go back to one of my mentors, Dondi Scubacci, who so brilliantly says, by all means, take your emotions along for the ride, but make sure you are driving the car. In other words, yeah, we have a lot to gain from our emotions, and we should treat our emotions like our board of directors, right? We can take counsel from them. We can, you know, dig into them. We can ask what they mean. But when it comes to those major decisions, we need to be in the CEO mode, right? We need to be the boss of our emotions. That decision needs to come from that logical element of ourselves. When we do that, we increase the odds that it's going to be the right decision. And to the degree we make the right decision, that increases the odds that the results are going to be what we want.
Yes, yes. I have had that experience actually reporting to a board. And sometimes what you hear is is not what you think is the right thing for the business, but you have to just digest the advice, you know, and master your emotions. And sometimes, ask for, you know, time to think about it, you know, and to let your emotions cool down a bit.
Oh, very important.
Yeah. The next principle, the second one, principle of influence that you mentioned in the book is step into the other person's shoes. This is one that, to me, I remember when I first read the book and I learned from you, it really was an aha moment for me. So can you please tell us a little bit about it?
Well, thank you. Yeah, you know, stepping into the other person's shoes is a saying we've certainly all heard before. Just step into the other person's shoes. And it sounds easy enough to do until you realize that it might not be so, because most of us have different size feet. So we literally cannot step into the other person's shoes. We figuratively cannot step into their minds. Why? Well, because we're not them. We all come from our own set of beliefs. I also refer to this as understanding the clash of belief systems. What is a belief? Well, a belief is a subjective truth. It's the truth as we understand the truth to be, which doesn't mean it's the truth. It simply means it's our truth, which, by the way, may also be the truth, but just as often it isn't, right? It's simply how we look at the world, how we understand the world. Our basic belief system is a combination of upbringing, environment, schooling, news media, television shows, popular culture, cultural mores, everything. But it tends to be, by the time we're little more than toddlers, our basic set of beliefs is pretty much etched in stone. Everything that comes in after that simply adds to that already established belief system, which, by the way, we took on long before and accepted long before we had reasoning ability and could question premises and ask, well, why should we believe that, right? So most of us, we grow up and live our lives subject to what I call an unconscious operating system, thinking that we're operating out of choice and free will and consciousness, when in reality, we're sort of stuck in a matrix, just like that first movie, right? Where we're living based on programmed thought, pre-programmed thought. So we're not even aware we have. And so now, if that's not difficult enough, we also need to understand that this other person who we're dealing with, so are they. They're living out of their own unconscious belief system, and they're living by their own set of truths. So they have their mind, their beliefs, their way of seeing the world. We have ours. But as human beings, we all tend to think, we tend to believe that other people see the world basically the same way we do, which only makes sense, right? After all, how could it be any different? It's all we know. But it's not true. We see the world a certain way. They see the world a certain way. And practically every conflict is the result of two people seeing two different elements of the same thing, not understanding that they're seeing it from two totally different viewpoints. Okay. So the only way we can step into another person's shoes and overcome this is to ask questions. Ask questions and really, really listen. You know, not listen with our ears, which is the surface level listening. That's often the listening that we do while we're waiting our turn to speak. But listen with our eyes. Listen with our posture. Listen with, as my co-author John David Mann likes to say, with the back of your neck. In other words, you're putting your full body, mind, soul, consciousness into listening and trying to understand this other person. And when they make a statement or say something, we can't even assume that we truly know what they mean by that. So we need to tactfully clarify, ask clarifying questions. You know, one of the best questions you can ask anyone ever in any situation, I call this the way to keep unnecessary conflict from ever happening, is to ask a person basically to explain what they mean by blank. So may I give you just a quick example?
Yeah, no, go ahead, please. Yes, do.
Let's say there's a team meeting. They're a small team. The group leader calls their team of three people. They've been working on a project, and says, "Hey, I just heard from the client and from up high. There's a change in this project. I need to get your reports on my desk as soon as possible." Okay. So now that this was Monday, early day. Now, Wednesday at 5 o'clock, the team leader calls the three people over and says, "Hey, I told you we needed to get this done as soon as possible. I only have George's on my desk." Here's what it turns out. Okay. George has worked with Mary, who's the team leader, has worked with her for a long time. He knows that as soon as possible means within 2 days, right? That's it. You put everything else aside, you get this to her, you know, within 2 days. Now, Steve, who worked in another division of the company, when his team leader said as soon as possible, that meant, well, once you get your current work done, now, you know, work on this. And then Jeanette, who comes from a whole other company and just joined this team, when her former supervisor said as soon as possible, it meant nothing. Just give it lip service, ignore it, and do what you're still doing. So you've got a term as soon as possible, right? And you've got three different definitions for what as soon as possible means. Three different belief systems, all believing that everyone else sees that term the same way they do. So instead, if you wanted to make sure that you knew what your team leader meant, Jeanette might say, "Well, you know, Mary, if I may ask, just to clarify, when you say as soon as possible, is there a specific date you're wanting this date and time you're wanting this handed in?" Well, now Mary could say, "Yes, I need it by end of day Wednesday, 5 o'clock." Now, everybody there knows what she means by as soon as possible. Now, the logical question might be, well, why didn't Mary just say so? Well, I don't know. Why does anybody not communicate? Because we think everybody else knows what we mean, right? So what Mary should have done, of course, is said, "We need this done as soon as possible," which means end of day, by end of day, Wednesday, 5 o'clock. And that's how you keep these misunderstandings from ever happening. You clarify, you ask people to define what they mean. Now you do it tactfully, you do it respectfully. And that's where we add the words, you know, just for my own clarification, or, you know, just to make sure I'm totally on time with this, or just to make sure we're on the same exact page. When you say blank, what do you mean by, or is there a specific, you know, what have you?
Totally agree. Totally agree with you. Excellent example. And unfortunately, it happens.
Yes. Yes, it happens a whole lot.
Right? Too often.
Mm-hmm.
Too often on something, as you said, as basic as that. Let's jump now to principle number three, which is set the frame and be ready to reset the other person's negative frame. Can you please explain the principle and also what this resetting is all about?
Sure. Well, you know, setting the proper frame or resetting it is so very important that if you do that successfully, you're basically 90% of the way to the results you want. A frame is simply defined as the foundation from which everything else occurs. Which, so obviously, if you, you know, set the proper, if the proper frame is set, the, you know, you're working within that very foundation. Let me give you an example of a perfectly set frame outside of corporate life, but just as applicable. This is many years ago. I was at a Dunkin' Donuts, and there was a couple of parents with their little boy, little toddler, probably, you know, 2.5, 3 years old. Little boy's running around the restaurant, and the parents call him back over to their table. He starts to walk over, and he takes a spill on the floor. He slips and he falls. Now, he wasn't hurt, you could tell, but he certainly was shocked, right? I mean, this was not within his realm of experience. So what's the first thing he did? He looked over his mom and dad for their interpretation of the event. See, what happened happened. He wanted to know, okay, what's next? You know, I don't know what to make of this. Now, I truly believe, Percy, that had the parents gotten upset and panicky and, oh no, my poor baby, are you okay? Right? He'd have started crying. But really, they handled it just beautifully. They walked over hurriedly, of course, but very calm with smiles on their faces. And they just, you know, they looked at him and they smiled and they laughed and they said, oh, what a fun trick. Can you do that again? Oh, that looks right. And immediately the little boy began to laugh and so forth. Now, what the parents did is they set a productive frame from which he could operate. So rather than having to reactively soothe him and dry his tears and, you know, and so forth, no, they didn't have to do that. They set such a great frame for him to work within that everything was fine. Now, setting a frame is actually pretty easy, right? It's how you greet someone. It's how you smile at someone. It's your body language. It's, you know, that's pretty easy. But what about when you've got someone who comes to you in a defensive frame or an angry frame or a, you know, again, victimized frame or whatever, and they come to your office and they're upset and they want, you know, well, now is where you've got to first, of course, control your emotions, right? And now, because you don't want to get sucked into their frame because they've set a negative frame. If you work within that frame and start either yelling or being defensive or whatever, now, you know, no good is going to come out of that at all. So you maintain your sense of calm. You let them know that, you know, you it's obvious that they are, you know, feeling something, that they are not happy about something, and that you'd like to help them and to work with them. And so, you know, please feel welcome to share with me what happened, and let's take a look at this and see how we can, you know, how we can, you know, work within this. And now you've changed that frame. Instead of an adversarial type of situation, now you've got a situation, now you've got a frame where it's two people who are both looking to find a solution.
Yeah. The interesting thing is how these, we've only covered three of the five, but how they connect to each other, they build on each other and they synergize, right?
Sure.
In this particular case, in your example, you just said, you know, well, first, you know, master your emotions. Don't react without thinking.
Sure.
The second one, you know, you are actually stepping into the other person's shoes, trying to understand what is causing these people to be so angry. And as a result of this, you have reset the frame.
Yeah.
The frame, and it is now is a more conciliatory, or maybe more, you know, definitely more friendly, more professional, etc. So let's jump to number four, which is communicate with tact and empathy. What can you tell us about this principle?
Yeah. And again, these are so important. You know, my dad always defined tact as the language of strength. And I always enjoyed that definition, because to me, how often do we want to react rather than respond, right, to someone's nasty look or email or words or accusations or, you know, what have you, right? And so it takes a lot of strength to be able to respond tactfully. Tact is really the ability to communicate an idea to someone in a way that where they normally would have been defensive toward us and resistant to our idea, instead they're open to us. They're more willing to be, they're more likely to be accepting of our idea. You know, we gave an example of a very simple definition of tact when we said earlier, you know, just for my own clarification, or it might be before you need to call someone on something to be able to say, you know, Dave, I so admire the work you've been doing lately. It's been fantastic. Now, that doesn't mean you then come in with an insult, but it means what you've done is you've been able to help to tactfully to let them know how much you appreciate them. You're not being accusatory. Or it might even be as you're looking to see an alternative way of doing something. You know, it might be, you know, Tom, I wonder, or Jeanette, you know, I'm just wondering if rather than Steve, I wonder if Diane might be the best person to lead this project. That's tact, as opposed to, no, you're really wrong. You know, you misjudge this. Diane needs to be the one to lead. You know, just a way of saying things that really kind of paves the way for someone to be more open. Remember, the ego is a big part of human nature. And when people feel attacked, or they feel put down, or they feel disrespected, the logic doesn't matter. Okay. Logic doesn't persuade people. People persuade people. And that's so, so very important. That's why what we call genuine influence is simply the ability to attain the results you want when dealing with others, while helping them feel genuinely good about themselves, about the situation, and about you. That's leadership. That's influence. So that's tact. Now, empathy, which by dictionary definition is simply the identification with or vicarious experiencing of another person's feelings. Well, the problem with this, right, is that we don't necessarily know how they feel. Just like in secret number two, we don't necessarily know what they're thinking. We don't know what's in their head. In this case, we don't know what's in their heart. Because again, we're not them. Now, the good news is empathy doesn't necessarily mean you need to know how they feel, that you need to understand how they feel, because again, you might not. What empathy really is communicating, whether through what you say or how you say it or simply how you show up. It's communicating that you understand they're feeling something, and that this something is causing them distress, and that you are there to help them work through it. That's communicating empathy. And that is so, so very valuable to others.
Yes, Bob. And reminded me of a conversation that I just had last week with a corporate CEO in a country in Latin America, who told me how he and his leadership team started using the combination of two of these principles, the principle number two, which is to stepping into the other person's shoes, combined with this fourth principle, which is communicating with empathy during the pandemic. And actually, it was so successful that they continue to do it now. He used the expression navigating the sea storm, but in different boats, to explain how his leadership team and him assigned a high priority to maintain a very close connection with every single employee in the company.
I love that.
When I kept probing, he says, well, yeah, they practiced listening with their ears, and as you said, also with their hearts, to truly step into each other person's shoes, the employee's shoes, understand what their personal and professional situation was and is, because they continue to do it, and whatever possible, provide the required support. So I think that this is a beautiful example, but it's an example of how beautifully the CEO and his team put into practice at least two of the principles. You know, the stepping into the other person's shoes and communicate with empathy.
Yeah. Well, you know, Percy, I know when you were an executive with one of the top home products companies, and one of the things they did in the some of the other countries that they were in, I believe in Central America and South America, is they actually had some of their team members go into the homes of, you know, of people in that target market and find out what they did, what their lives were like, what their day-to-day activities were, so that they could better understand how their products would be of value to them.
Oh, yes.
That's empathy. That's the essence of empathy. You don't have to understand how they feel, but you have to understand they're feeling something, and your goal is to the degree possible, to be able to understand that in order to serve their needs. That, to me, is a wonderful example.
And I will build on that, Bob, which is that the customer felt listened to.
Right.
Now, let's jump to the last principle, which is to let go of having to be right. And by the way, this is, I think, probably the one that I see people in the corporate world have the biggest challenges with, not with with understanding it, but in actually practicing it. What can you tell us about it, please?
Well, and again, remembering that ego is an absolute ego, which is connected with emotion, and we know we're emotional beings. Ego is an absolute driver of human nature, okay? And now that doesn't mean we have to accept that and let that be, but it means we have to understand it just is, and that if we're going to overcome that, we need to accept that it's a problem, right? First need to know it's an issue before you can do anything about it. And so let go of having to be right. This is such a biggie. Now, let me just clarify. That doesn't mean that you don't want to be right. Doesn't mean you don't desire to be right. It doesn't mean you're not going to prepare to be right. It means what you're going to do is lose your emotional attachment to having to be right, or to be 100% right. And when you do this, a couple of wonderful things happen. First, you go into learner's mode. And that's something we should all always be in, learner's mode, right? It's that ability to want to know what we don't know, or know that we don't know, so that we can better equip ourselves. Now, this as opposed to the person whose life's philosophy seems to be, my mind is made up, don't confuse me with the facts. That person can never know anything more than they know right now. And typically, to the degree that a person really believes they're right about everything, they typically don't know anywhere near what they think they know. Much of what they are absolutely sure they know just isn't true, for obvious reasons, right? Their mind is closed to any kind of additional understanding. So when we're that person who can let go of having to be right, we open up our minds to the information that helps us to actually be right more often. But what it also does is this, you know, when you're in a conversation with someone that you don't necessarily agree with and they don't necessarily agree with you, and you let go of having to be right, that other person, they get it. They understand that. And they tend to drop their defensiveness because they know you're not looking to just be right at all costs. They know you're not looking to be right by making them wrong, but that really you are looking for the truth wherever that truth may lead. And when that happens, not only are they less defensive, but they then become more open to letting go of having to be right and seeking the truth as well. When a leader can do this, Percy, they absolutely separate and distinguish themselves from pretty much the rest of the field.
Yes, Bob. And actually, once again, I have seen leaders in the corporate world that combine number three with number five, which is that those who set the frame and let the team, you know, work on the subject, on the issue, on the problem, on the challenge to come up with a solution, those are much more effective working in a team rather than the one who come in and say, hey, this is the way we're going to do it. And unless anybody thinks differently, we'll go for this. That does not allow the team to come up with other potential ideas or to even challenge, you know, what the boss has said. Mm-hmm. Let me summarize the five secrets of genuine influence that you have presented to us today. The first one was master your emotions. The second one was step into the other person's shoes. Number three was set the frame. Number four, communicate with tact and empathy. And number five, let go of having to be right. I want to thank you, Bob, for all the wisdom and the practical advice that you have shared with us today. In some shape or form, I have been coaching corporate leaders that I work with to apply one or more of these five principles. I have to confess that my very favorite one is empathy. And within empathy, obviously, listening not only with your ears, but with your heart. And I want to just repeat what you said, that it doesn't necessarily mean that you understand what's going on in the heart of the other person, but you want to show that you realize that there is something going on in there, right? You're aware of that and you respect that and you do not want to ignore that, correct?
Exactly. Yep, absolutely. Right on.
So any closing words from you, and how can the listeners learn more about you, the Go-Giver, and your work, Bob?
Probably the best way is just to go to burg.com, and they can pretty much find everything there, including the books where they can read sample chapters to see if they like them. They can also, while they're there, subscribe to my free daily impact email that I send out Monday through Fridays. And look forward to having everyone with us. And it's been a delight speaking with you. I you know, always wish you and your wonderful family well. You do such wonderful work, Percy, and you're such a great mentor and coach to so many.
Well, thank you. It must be because I may have learned this from the best, which is you. Thank you, Bob. I hope you, our podcast followers, enjoyed today's episode. In the next one, we will cover more leadership tips to help you accelerate your career growth. Like what you heard today? Please rate, subscribe, or follow this podcast and share it with your coworkers and friends. This is Percy Cannon, working to help you make the rest of your life the best of your life.
Thank you for listening to the Career Accelerator, the podcast where corporate managers will find tips and tools to deliver results through others. Stay tuned for our next episode.